Step 9 is power comes from discipline. When I was 28 years old, and I first got into understanding the Tao, understanding the possibility of an alternative philosophy, an alternative perception, what drove me on more than anything else was the desire to comprehend the unseen world, the unseen realities that permeate our reality, to really understand what our maximum potential is as humans. I remember one day going through a neighborhood in London called Putney. There was a small church there. For some reason, I parked my car and went in. The church was completely empty. I just knelt down at the back and looked up at the altar. The church was old and very beautiful, as many English churches are, and there was an organist playing above me in the choir gallery. I remember thinking, who am I? What do I want in this lifetime? What are my goals? I pondered for a moment and realized that what I really wanted was knowledge. So I put my arms up, looking up to the heavens, so to speak, and said, God, make me wise. Give me wisdom. I didn't ask for glamour, power, enormous amounts of money, or even an easy life. I asked for wisdom. I have to say that that was one of the most impacting days of my life, when I asked for that, because it wasn't long after that that I met a guy who was teaching some special meditation courses. They were theta brainwave meditation courses. Having met him and then met other teachers, I went on from there. Bit by bit, I did get a certain amount of wisdom, and I'm still getting it. So the God Force is still supplying on the deal that I made in that little church in Putney many, many years ago. Blessed little cotton socks. The center point in all of this is your desire for wisdom greater than your need to accommodate the ego, the personality? In the battle for control of the mind, you have to have discipline. So step 9 is the realization that your power comes from discipline. The ego will always go to the self-indulgent side. It has uses because it keeps you centered and it gives you identity, but the ego is basically weak. The personality that contains your memories in which the ego dwells is also weak because it's self-indulgent and seeks gratification. True power, true knowledge, the ability to transcend this physical plane and peer into these other worlds to become part of a bigger evolution comes only from discipline. Why? It's not as if God is sitting up there somewhere, bless it, saying, I want you to do this, I want you to do that. Because God is not involved in an emotional perception of our evolution. The importance of discipline is not to win anyone's approval, but to understand that you can't control the mind without it. So you have to start making yourself do things that help you establish control. The discipline of serenity, quiet time on your own. The discipline of working on your physical body, which we'll talk about in a later session. The discipline of disengaging from all the antagonistic, adversarial positions that you may find yourself in. You have to settle those because it's hard to go beyond the ego and the earth plane if you're constantly at war with other people. The discipline of order in your life. The discipline of rising early. The infinite self within you is the God force, and it's pure. It's unencumbered with considerations and attitudes. The intellect clutters the infinite self. The Taoists revered nature because they said that in nature we see the external manifestation of God, of the God force, the Tao, in its uncluttered state, free from intellect, free from the definitions of the mind. So in the Tao, the grace of God is seen through the abundance of nature, the animals, the wind, the water, and through the ever-changing seasons. So I went out at 4 a.m. each night to discover what the Taoist meant. I walked every night at the same time. No matter if it was raining or snowing, sometimes it was a beautiful night, sometimes it wasn't, I walked in silence. There's a special kind of walking that comes from one of the monastic orders in China. It's what I call tiger walking. Rather than walking by putting your heel down first and then your toes, as we normally walk, you walk by pointing your foot and putting the outside edge of your foot down first and then your toes and then the heel. It's very graceful, but it's not easy to do. When you're walking, it forces you to concentrate while you're doing it. It's a kind of discipline. So I would do this tiger walking around the forest at 4 a.m., sometimes in absolutely atrocious weather. But what I decided was that as a discipline, I would ignore the weather. I wasn't going to let my personality whinge and moan because it was windy or hailing or whatever. I was going to do weather and have no reaction. So I'd wander off and I'd do my tiger walking for an hour and then I'd come home, have a cup of tea and meditate for 24 minutes. That's my recommended time, 1 minute of meditation for each hour of the day. In the final session of this 33 steps program, there's a theta metronome, which is oscillating at 4 to 6 cycles per second. The little bits are designed to help you with your meditations. They allow you to enter into a low brain speed, a meditative state, regardless of whether you have any experience of meditating or not. Even if you're a very experienced meditator, the theta metronome helps you because it slots you in down there at the theta level very, very quickly and holds you in that trance state. So I've included the metronome in this series because I thought it would be a tool to help you and to assist you reach the inner part of yourself wherein the infinite self dwells. You should make meditation a part of your daily life. Discipline that's imposed from above isn't as good as self-discipline. In the end, you have to become self-disciplined, and you have to impose upon yourself discipline, because otherwise you don't exert complete control. Another of the disciplines that I took on was vegetarianism, which I did for 7 years. I did the walking in the forest for 3 years, and I've meditated pretty much every day of my life since I first got started. Another of the techniques or disciplines that are useful, which I believe comes from the Hindu tradition, is just before you go to sleep at night, review the day backwards. What you do is run through all the experiences of the day and just look at them. You don't comment on them or ponder on them. You just watch them happening as you run the time clock from bedtime back to dawn when you got up. It's a way of unraveling the day and allowing those experiences to be released from your mind. And I believe it cuts down the need for lots of trivial dreams where the mind is processing stuff that happened during the day. It's like moving backwards in time, and it's a discipline that you do just before you fall asleep. It's where you stop to notice your life. Life will not just be passing you by because your affirmation is that you're going to want to notice it. So try this backwards thinking process at night and go back through your day. Reviewing the day's events unclutters the mind and allows you to go to sleep in a very pure state. Much of the inner communication you have with that infinite self is initially at night. So if you go to bed calm and serene and uncluttered, you can reach that infinite self more fully and be more aware of what it is telling you. If in reviewing the day there was some particular problem, rather than trying to think it through then as you're falling asleep, say to your infinite self within, I want to review this situation during the night, and I want you to give me the answer to my problem in the morning. Next day, either when you wake up or later on, ideas or solutions drift into your mind. The process is quite wonderful and magical, and it's amazing how it works, but it does. So give your problem to the infinite self and let it show you the solution. Not only does that help you with your problems, but it helps you establish a dialogue or communication inside yourself with that infinite self, beyond the intellectuality of the personality that's doing the day-to-day living. Another discipline that I imposed upon myself, which I'm going to mention in detail in step 14, is the discipline of not criticizing and not judging too much. By criticizing and judging, you constantly lock yourself into the ego's world, into its definitions, and you deny yourself the infinite world. The point is, you need serenity, and part of how you disengage from the emotion of the world and your personal emotions is by disengaging from definition, from criticism, from judgment. In order to be able to do that, you need time on your own. You need time to feel settled, to really look into your heart and to ask, who am I? Another thing that I want you to try is this. Light a candle and sit in front of a mirror. Stare at yourself there, looking slightly downwards because it's more restful for your eyes. Stare at the center of your throat. Now, without blinking, try to watch yourself in that mirror. Play the metronome if you like. And bit by bit, as you relax and you melt into the mirror and you let yourself go, you will see images and feelings coming out of the mirror at you. At first, they may be a little freaky because you think, my God, what's that? But allow them to be. What you're really seeing is an externalization of your inner mind, your subconscious mind. So perceptions will come up, and bit by bit, you'll have visions. Eventually, other worlds will open up, and you'll be able to look into the mirror, and you will see other dimensions. Sometimes those inner worlds actually appear to be coming out of the mirror towards you. Just watch them, and don't let them freak you out. The mirror exercise, silent walking, meditation, nutritional discipline, exercise, will all begin to assist you to understand the multi-dimensional nature of this reality. The other thing that you may want to do is start thinking of yourself as a multi-directional being. We tend to think of reality being in front of us, which is the direction that our eyes are focused. But start to ask yourself, what is behind me? What is to my left and what is to my right? What is below me, down through the ground or underneath? What is above? And you start to think of yourself resonating in 360 degrees in every direction, above and below as well. And as you start to enter into that perception, the infinite self will show you things. It'll show you the spaces between the leaves of the trees. It'll show you the silence in the talking. It'll show you the breathing in and breathing out of this experience that we call humanity. You will ask a question, and suddenly a bus will go past, and on the bus will be an advertisement for shampoo, say, and the text of the advertisement will answer your question. You'll begin to get into an interactive dialogue with life around you. The infinite self is there to show you, to teach you, to lead you on to more and more energy. But discipline is vital, because you cannot wrestle the personality into a place where it is quiet and serene without discipline. Step 10 follows automatically from 9, and it is the need to center the mind. Centering the mind is one of the major disciplines in discovering yourself, because it is how you get in touch with your subconscious, where all your motivations and urges and your initial programming are stored. If you don't get in control of the mind, it's like having 40 chickens in a truck, and they're all constantly flying about. There's feathers everywhere and a tremendous commotion going on. Somehow, you've got to sit your chickens down in little rows, and centering the mind is how you do it. It's not necessarily only a meditation process. You can center the mind while you're walking along. It's just a matter of being focused upon yourself rather than distracted. If your mind perceives something, hears something, and it reacts, it will tend to drag you off one way or another with emotional or intellectual response. But if you just get into the habit of just watching, so as you walk down the street, don't comment, just watch. That way you're not reacting to everything, and you're not reacting to things that are said to you with joy or anger or frustration or happiness. You're just watching. What you're looking to do is to complete this process of detachment by teaching yourself to not react, to become an observer of life, but more important, to become an observer of yourself. The classic example that I talk about in my lectures is rain. Rain is a great way of centering the mind. People don't like rain. They don't like cold water running down their neck. So we react to rain negatively. However, when it's raining, you can go out there and use it to train yourself. You can just walk in the rain and say to yourself, I'm doing rain. This is neither good nor bad. So next time it's absolutely pelting down, get your coat on, or preferably, don't put your coat on. Just walk out in a pair of slacks and a blouse, a shirt or whatever, and walk in the cold. And experience the wet, experience the cold, and don't react. And just say to yourself, hey, I'm doing rain here. Train yourself. There are lots of day-to-day circumstances where you can train yourself to just observe. Imagine a friend that's really driving you crazy, telling you something. You're sitting there having coffee, and they're driving you crazy. And rather than letting them drive you crazy, step back emotionally and love them and watch them, even though they're being completely ridiculous. When you're stuck in traffic, rather than getting angry, observe yourself stuck in traffic, along with 500 other people that are stuck in traffic. So what is happening today? We're doing traffic. Once you can practice this, and once you can practice this detachment, you can do mother-in-law, you can do check bouncing, you can do, you know, getting laid off from work, you can do all sorts of stuff. It's just a matter of training the mind not to trigger emotions, and you get into control, you accept. So if you walk out in the parking lot and the car's not there, you can say, oh, I'm doing tiger walking because the car's gone, and you start to walk. Become an observer of life. Remember, you're not your emotions, you're not your body, you're not your personality, you're a divine, infinite energy that is operating through the body and the mind. And the whole point of centering is to become an observer of life, to go past having to react, the same way as everybody else in the tribal mind reacts. Beyond centering the mind, there's the meditative state. And I can't see any way that you can reach the infinite self without quiet time and meditation. Because you have to look at the subconscious mind. And if you don't look at who you are and what programming you received and how that has resulted in the circumstances of your life, then there isn't any real way for you to understand yourself. Most people on the planet are just external. They live only in the external world. They are external personalities, if you like. They don't think about their urges and desires, they just react to them. And they usually react with resistance. So in a certain situation, they may get scared, and they immediately react and think, I better do something. So they'll eat chocolate, drink, take drugs, anything to stop the experience of being scared. But rather than trying to dampen down the experience of being scared, you can observe yourself being scared. And you could look at her and look at him and say, oh, look at her, she's doing scared today. Because it's okay to be scared sometimes as a human. So rather than reacting to beat down or push down the fear, just observe it. Most fears are irrational anyway, aren't they? So in meditating, you begin to get in touch with what your fears are, what your programming is. So you'll understand the strange idiosyncrasies of the way that your inner mind, your subconscious mind, is put together. So you'll look at a guy in a supermarket with a green coat and an umbrella, and suddenly that generates fear in you, and you don't know why. Yet in a meditative state, you can go back to the time when you were 5 years old, and a guy with a green coat and an umbrella scared you in the supermarket. And suddenly you understand that there is no real rationale to being scared about a guy with a green coat and an umbrella. So through meditation, you begin to understand where your external life actually comes from. Certain words, certain sounds, certain smells, certain sentences, you know, parts of films, all of these things can trigger reactions inside you that you then externalize by eating chocolate or calling your mother or whatever. So meditation is the way that you begin to get inside the true reality of what you are. All your questions have an answer back deep inside the subconscious mind. It takes a while to reach in there and pick it all out, but the process unravels and the knots become less and less complicated as you begin to use meditation as a discipline. Let's talk just for a moment about brainwaves so that you can understand this whole meditation thing. In the waking state, your brain is oscillating at approximately 14 cycles a second and above. It doesn't mean that your whole brain is oscillating at that, but it means that it is predominantly oscillating at that speed. It's known as the beta state, which is the normal waking state. Down from that is the alpha state. A lot has been written about alpha. There are loads of books and courses you can go on to learn to generate alpha. It's a light meditative state. It's also the wave band of intuition, where dreams take place. Alpha oscillates at 7 to 14 cycles a second. It's very regenerative and very restful and great for stress reduction, light meditation, and it just allows you to have that physiological relaxation. However, below the alpha state is the theta wave band, the 4 to 6 cycles a second, which is the wave band that is on the metronome provided in the last session of this program. Theta is really the trance state. When your brain is firing theta, you'll be able to feel the physical body, but only minimally. It's almost as if it's not there. You really just melt from being a physical being to becoming universal mind, completely infinite. What I found so fascinating about the theta state is that it doesn't take very long to learn how to generate it, especially if you use the metronome provided in the last session, which is the metronome that I've used for the last 20 years. Meditation is an excellent discipline because as you go into this controlled, relaxed state, what you're really doing is disempowering the ego. You're telling the personality, listen, sit down and shut up. Sure, at the beginning, it's going to come up with these little thought forms, like, hey, we need to service the car and that kind of stuff. It'll distract you. It will try to push against your serenity by dribbling thoughts into your mind. But as you control, as you say, I don't accept these thoughts. I don't accept this distraction. I'll handle the car later. I'm changing my views. I'm changing my focus. Thank you for telling me about this fear, but I don't accept that fear as a reality in my life. When I need to act, I will. As you push against the mind and you start to talk back at it, little by little, the thoughts will melt away and you will enter into a state of pure mind, pure consciousness. That is a very holy and spiritual place, the place where you enter into the infinite self. Not just your mind, not just your subconscious, but through that to the total molecule that makes up the global mind, and beyond that to the molecule of consciousness that is the cosmic mind, which of course would be the mind of God, the mind of everything that exists, past, present, and future. Click, a door opens, and you enter back inside your rightful spiritual place. Meditation also begins to change you physiologically. The chemicals in your brain react to emotion. So a person that's hysterical will actually begin to generate chemicals in the brain that will make them more hysterical. If you're slightly psychotic and you allow yourself to wander around like that for a period of time, the cocktail of chemicals in your brain changes to reflect your mood. It's only been discovered recently, in the last 10 years. The chemical makeup of the brain is a byproduct of your moods and feelings and attitudes. Initially, moods and attitudes were thought to be only a byproduct of the chemistry. But now we know that the cocktail in your brain is partially created anyway by how you feel. So the sick get sicker. And the people that are getting well change the cocktail in their mind and they get better. So if you're very negative, the cocktail changes to reflect that negativity and you become more negative. If you start to enter this infinite serenity, the chemical cocktail of your brain starts to become more serene. The endorphins begin to fire. You become happier. The serotonin level changes. Calmness descends upon you, and all of a sudden you begin to create a complete settled being by changing the physiological chemistry of the brain. So by taking on the meditative discipline, and by doing it for 24 minutes a day, you'll begin to affirm, I am in control. I am controlling myself through silence. I am going beyond these emotions, these ideas, these fears, these reactions of the intellect. I am in charge. And so what you're doing is exercising the force of your will over your personality. Sure, you operate through your personality, and you need your personality, but you aren't only a personality. You're a consciousness that can direct will upon the personality and change it. So, find a comfy spot and meditate, preferably in the morning before the rest of the world has got up, and play your metronome and sit still. At the beginning, it will feel a little bit frustrating because you'll experience nothing in particular. Your mind will react. But little by little, you're going to see things. The first things you see are colored blobs in front of your eyes. Let them pass. Then symbols will come to you. Then you'll begin to peer into what seem to be other worlds and other dimensions. Words will drop into your mind that don't necessarily come from your personality. A whole teaching begins that is available to you in there. It takes discipline. It takes tenacity, and it takes time. But there's an enormous amount of information if you want to turn within and access that library. The master, the supernatural master, is within. But it's through the ego, deep into the subconscious mind, and then on into the higher realms, these cosmic realms, that is where you'll find the energy. It will teach you and show you. Sometimes what it shows you is very practical. Things about your health, finances, relationships, say. Other times, it shows you general patterns of the world's destiny, a greater understanding of this evolution, perhaps, the overall destiny of our people. Sometimes it shows you a heightened perception of the position in which you find yourself at this particular time. It's a very heroic time to be on Earth. There's a tremendous amount of creativity and change and possibilities, and you're part of that. This is truly a wonderful time. In the discipline of meditation, you liberate yourself. This isn't something that's going to happen in 10 or 15 minutes. It's a process that you're going to do for the rest of your life. You may not necessarily do it on the same spot for 24 minutes every day, because sometimes your meditation might be just 5 or 10 minutes while you're commuting to work, or whatever time you have available. And some days you might be too busy to mess with playing the metronome. But you need to pause and reflect every day. Anytime you have a spare moment, start tapping within and watching the silence and beginning to eke out the information that's in there. It can be in a field, under a tree, stuck in traffic, whatever. So step 9 is power comes from discipline. Step 10 is centering the mind. Without these two steps, you haven't got much of a chance because you'll get inspired for a little while, but bit by bit, the personality will win back all the ground that it's lost and you'll find yourself where you were before. So in centering, pondering, reflecting, you continue to power your journey towards the infinite self. And it will graciously teach you. It's happy to. It has all the information there. All you have to do is want to access it. Everything is explainable deep inside the mind. Step 11 is believing that you are the energy, being it. So you've got to believe that you are already a part of this power. You have the energy of the initiate within you, and you're it. There's a tremendous difference, isn't there, between hoping you may become it, hoping you may become a great actor, hoping that you may make $1 million or marry the person of your dreams, and actually belonging to your dreams. So you have to believe in an infinity that you can't touch, see, smell, taste, or hear. But you can gradually learn to feel it, and that's what's important. Because the infinity within you is beyond the subconscious mind, it oscillates faster than our dimension, faster than the personality. Faster than the subconscious mind. It is outside normal perception. So here you're required to become aligned to an energy that is outside of your perception. Understanding you're it, even if you can't see it. After many years of using the Theta Metronome for meditation, I started having fleeting glimpses of these other worlds. In the end, it became easy to get there, because I'd tracked a path in, so to speak, and so I would gradually see the near-death tube that people who have survived medical emergencies talk about. In the trance state, you can simulate death, so eventually, once you've cleared out the crud of the ego, that tube appears. It's a highway between here and there, the other worlds. Beyond the tube are countless dimensions of evolution. Some are bathed in the God Force. When I first saw that God Force, I was completely overwhelmed. I've never seen so much beauty, so much reconciliation, all at once. It's almost as if all of the inconsistencies of my life were healed in that one moment, in that one vision, bathed in the light of this exquisite force. The most startling thing I discovered was that the love that exudes from the light of God is impartial. It is not an emotional love as we understand it here on earth. The God Force has no needs or desires. It just is. So celestial love is everywhere because the God Force is everywhere. But that love asks nothing in return. It has no emotion. It has no criticism, preference, or judgment. My reaction to that impartial love was one of extreme happiness that came from a sense of belonging. Now things for me on earth had finally had some meaning. The energy at the end of the near-death tube is the same energy that flows through all things. It doesn't have a comprehension of what you need. It doesn't know whether you have the job you want or you don't. It's like electricity. Electricity can light a church, it can light a brothel. It can light a torture chamber, it can light a kindergarten. It's a power that seeks no particular end or result for itself, or for you, but you can direct it into your life. And that's nothing more than visualizing it moving into the circumstances of your life, breathing in the people, breathing in the circumstances of your life, and as you exhale, directing this invisible power towards them. People respond to it instantly. It's no more than pushing that energy out, unemotionally, in the form of love and light. It's you pushing energy so other people can become stronger and more free. But first, you have to internalize that power, as I said in step one. You have to belong to your goals and dreams. If, say, you want more money and you can't internalize that feeling, if you don't feel abundant, if you don't act abundantly, if you don't come out of graciousness and generosity, if you're not open and warm-hearted, then the universal law just reflects back to you your cold, tight feelings, and you get nothing more than you have now, and probably some will even be taken away from you. It doesn't matter if right now, from your point of view, in your current economic or social standing, you're not a big person. But deep within, you've got to start to feel big. Feel yourself larger than life. This silent bigness exudes confidence. So stand tall for people. Be there. Don't be pushy with your dialogue and catchphrases. Don't show off. Stand inside your silent power and stand tall. Silent power is a real energy, a valuable energy. It's not just verbal diarrhea of the mind. So, do this. Visualize yourself there in your hometown, standing across it like you're 300 or 500 feet tall. You're a big energy standing over this town. The little things of day-to-day life don't bother you. You don't mind a little rain. You don't mind the mother-in-law coming round. You don't mind a few people giving you a hard time in the supermarket. You don't mind the guy in the post office that was rude to you. You don't mind if a car cuts you off in traffic. You're bigger than these things. You're standing in an evolution that's bigger than the petty world of tribal sensations. Beyond the personality, beyond the mind, standing big inside the infinite self. In our world, we move along a straight timeline. Yesterday, today, tomorrow. In the infinite self, the future is now. That is why it's so important for you to believe in yourself now and to believe in this power now. If you're going to move towards a goal, you've got to see it in your mind's eye and you have to act it out and know it is granted now and it has to be granted in your feelings. So if you want a new car, you can't put it in some distant future place in your mind. That's hopelessly difficult to achieve. You have to feel that you have it now. That's why I say to people, hey, if you want a Rolls Royce, go into the showroom and sniff it. Get inside the car and start sniffing around. When the car salesman comes to you and says, excuse me, sir, madam, can I help you? You say, I've got to sniff my car before I buy it because I've got to know what this leather feels like. I understand this is some of the finest leather in the world. I want to know what it feels like, so excuse me for a moment while I sniff the car. As soon as the money materializes, I'll be back with my check and you can give me that little silver metallic one over there. You've got to believe and you've got to feel. When things are distanced from you, you'll never achieve them. The mind says, nah, we can't have that. So if abundance is your issue, feel abundant. Somewhere in one of my books, I talk about going into a 5-star hotel, if you haven't got any money, and go into the most la-di-da place in town and just sit there and have a coffee and drink it slowly. Don't spend a lot of money, but join. Join with the millionaires. Be there in that marble palace, the hotel la-di-da, and declare yourself in. Join on an energy level. Because it is by joining in your feelings that things come to you. By joining serenity, serenity embraces you. Never mind if your life is a mess right now and you have loads of problems or whatever. Still be serene, quietly working your way through things. You've got to feel the infinite self, even if you're completely victimized by your personality and your ego. You've got to feel abundant when you haven't got any money. It sounds like a contradiction, but it isn't. Because the minute you start to feel abundant, your energy moves up. That's what we're trying to do here, is ratchet you up to another place. Leaving, waving, saying goodbye, and going to another evolution inside your feelings. Understanding that the infinite self is there to guide you, so you're not on your own. And remember, you don't have to know where you're going. You just have to know where you're putting the very next step. Say to yourself as a discipline, several times a day, I'm eternal, immortal, universal and infinite. I am what I am. And as you say these words, watch how they resonate throughout your entire being, through the personality, through the mind. And then you'll begin to see the world in infinite terms. Finite, beyond limitations, beyond restriction and manipulation, beyond where you're infringing upon people and you're allowing them to be. And bit by bit, that infinity comes up from within you to grace your life. You have to understand that the God force, this incredible supreme wonderfulness that flows through all things, it doesn't infringe, it doesn't mess, it just allows you to be. You can be as silly as you want for as long as you want. God doesn't come down and say, listen, you little twerp, get your act together. When you're ready, the energy's there. It's the same with the infinite self within you. It's ready, you just have to embrace it. Believing in the righteousness and sacredness of this journey, believing in goodness, seeing abundance, seeing beauty, constantly moving towards serenity, towards goodness and away from ugliness. And as you do that, you enter into a tone poem that is the ebb and flow, the warm, gentle wind of the divine light within you. Allow this cosmic poem to flow through your life. So step 11 is believing you're it and being it. It requires you to believe in the unbelievable, to observe the unobservable, to become a part of things which we cannot normally become a part of. It asks you to step through a door to another world. Come with me now to the next session, and I'll show you that place inside of you where that mysterious doorway exists, and I'll give you the keys you need to open it. Let's discuss principles that will assist you to consolidate these ideas in your heart. The spiritual world is your true place. It has been waiting since the beginning of time, waiting for you to return. Let us step towards it. Come. Step 12 is your word as law. Establishing your word as law is important. The mind is used to getting away with a lot of promises it never keeps. You tell yourself that you'll do this and that, and then you don't. You say you'll pay your friend on Saturday, and then you forget or duck out of it. It's important to establish your word as law unto yourself, as your affirmation of developing authority over the ego. If you say to yourself you will do something, then do it. Don't make promises you won't keep, and don't make promises to others if you can't or won't follow through. Become immaculate, be honorable. Don't commit if you don't have to. You can always stall saying, I'm not sure, call me in a week. People are used to that. Making your word law, you develop power. Sounds easy, doesn't it? Most people are not used to their word as law. They're used to wimping out, ducking away if conditions don't suit them. That weakens them. For the mind knows you're full of BS. As you start to work upon yourself, your energy moves faster. In my book, Miracles, I suggest that the total energy that you express as a physical body, as a mind, as a personality, as a spiritual being, is an oscillation. It's an oscillation that's moving very, very quickly. In my book, I selected a hypothetical oscillation of 20,000 cycles a second as a possible oscillation for the average human in TikTok. There's no way for us to measure or quantify how fast people are actually oscillating. So I picked a figure out of a hat. I said that if an ordinary person is at 20,000 cycles a second, a person that's begun to work upon themselves might oscillate at, say, 25,000 cycles a second. And a person that's very light might be 50,000 cycles a second, and the initiate might be 100,000 cycles a second or above. You're basically a wave state that is oscillating. That's what you are. As you move your energy up faster and faster, your ability to materialize things becomes more and more instantaneous. At 20,000 cycles a second, a person will have an idea or visualize or think about something, and they'll wait 19, 20 years in order to get what they're hoping for, and then it may still not occur. Once your energy starts going faster and faster, whatever thoughts you have in your mind, whatever feelings you indulge in, become reality extremely quickly. You think about the burning bush, and there it is in your hallway, burning. So one of the things you have to do is realize that you're grasping an immense power. Any errant thoughts, and suddenly a great turd is falling on your head from a great height. So your word as law requires you to understand your power. Understand that as your energy goes up, you're going to get whatever it is that you put out. So it's best not to use your thoughts and dialogue in a flippant way. You're not going to make promises you won't keep. If you say to yourself, I'm going to give up chocolate, don't say that, and then half an hour later sit there and munch through an entire box. If you make a discipline, a law for yourself, you will follow through. If you don't feel confident with following through, don't make the law. Don't say you're going to give up chocolates if you're not going to give up chocolates. When you're good and ready, you'll give them up. Until then, wait. Embrace your word as law, and you'll see a defined benefit in your life immediately, as things you need will pop up effortlessly. But you have to mean what you say, so choose your words carefully. Be purposeful, and police what you think and feel. If any crud comes into your mind, pounce on it quickly and change it. Also, don't give people a load of BS. Don't talk gibberish. Mostly, don't talk about yourself. Listen to others instead. Talk about them. Don't promise things you can't deliver. Don't agree to things you don't want to do, that you know you aren't going to follow through on. Become verbally disciplined. Don't show off, don't boast, don't exaggerate. Just stay inside what is true and real. Next, get into a dialogue of truth with yourself. In other words, don't buy all of the waffle of the mind. The mind says we're doing fine, and you know you're not doing fine. The mind says we're looking for a job, and you know you're not looking for a job. When you say to yourself, my word is law, then you establish a dominance, an authority over the mind. And you know that when you say something, you're going to follow through. Here's an exercise that will strengthen your will and help you along a bit. Pick a spot outside your house or in the park, wherever. Find 12 stones. Go there in the early morning and tell your mind, I'm going to move these stones ceremoniously every morning from 7:01 a.m. for 7 days for 15 minutes. Then pick up the first stone and ceremoniously walk across the garden and place it down. Bow and say to the stone, thank you. Then walk across the garden, pick up a second stone and take it over to the other side. Place that down next to the first and gradually get all the 12 stones across the garden. Now pause for a moment and pick up the first stone one more time and take it back across the garden to where it was originally. Transfer all the 12 stones back again to the original side. It seems like a pointless exercise. It's supposed to be. The mind will ask, why are we moving 12 stones across the yard? And you'll tell it, shush, we're getting stoned. The fact is, you're strengthening your will and establishing yourself as the lawgiver in the realm of your consciousness anyway. You're saying, this is my law. At 7:01 a.m. every day for 7 days, I will ceremoniously move these stones. That has the effect of not only establishing the discipline, but it establishes your will as the dominant force. And it forces you to go beyond the discomfort that the mind may go through. The mind won't want to mess with it. These actions are outside its normal legislation. At this point, you dismiss the discomfort rather than accommodating the ego, which would prefer to stay in bed. Set a discipline for yourself, like moving the 12 stones, and do it for 7 days. My word is law. If you haven't got a garden near you, move 100 books on and off your bookshelf, but do it exactly at 7:01 every day for 7 days. In establishing the idea of my word as law, you improve your ability to materialize things that you want. You understand that when you come up with a thought or a feeling, when you express verbally, gradually that thing is going to appear in your life. Because you can materialize your consciousness. The boundary between your internal world and your external world melts. Your definitions go. You see yourself as the infinite self. There's no more inside reality and outside reality. There's only one infinite consciousness of which you're a part. The ego tries to separate you. It seeks to define itself by creating separation. As you move towards the infinite self, what you're doing is joining the inner energy. Not just the inner energy of all the people on the planet, but the cosmic energy in all things. In that joining, you will be able to pull things to you and materialize them from a great distance. The ego has to go get things. It has to find things. It has to struggle to materialize things. It has to force things to happen. It has to sell itself. Rather than forcing things to happen, see the whole planet as inside of you, as a part of you. When I say to you, stand tall, be a big person, I mean expand your mind, expand your feelings to incorporate everything. You're an infinite being and you are everywhere. Be everywhere. Be everything. Once you're everything, through your connection with the infinite self, you are connected to everything. Then materializing things is easy. So you'll have an idea and suddenly there you are on a train sitting opposite somebody and you think, my God, he's good looking. I wanted a soulmate. And here I am sitting right opposite to my soulmate. Instantly. So the speed that things materialize in your life is a good way of understanding how fast your energy is going. But with it comes discipline. Be careful, because if you say to yourself, this is a bunch of crud, plonk, the great goo-goo bird drops one from the sky on your head. If you say this is a pain in the rear end, the next thing you're going to be doing is buying hemorrhoid tablets from the chemist. So, you're going to use your word as law and clean up your dialogue. Don't talk or think in terms of things being hard, things being evil, things being ugly, things being difficult, impossible. Constantly clean up your act and say, hey, I feel great. I'm eternal, immortal, universal and infinite. I feel abundant. When people say, do you see the ugliness over there? You say, no, I see the bird flying above. Isn't it beautiful? When they say, do you see the depravity over there? You say, no, I don't see the depravity. I see the chubby legs of the children running across the playground. Watch your thought forms and don't make promises you can't keep. Especially when you're in a dialogue with yourself. Step 13 is acceptance. I talked to you about disengaging from negativity in step 5. Now I want you to develop an individual spiritual evolution by stepping away from the tribal mind and the resistance you have within your own mind. This is a continuation of the process of disengaging. Through it, you calm your yearning. It's simple. You just have to get it. Because of ego, the tribal mind is always uncomfortable. People achieve momentary happiness, but they don't have the permanent ecstasy of the God force inside of them. They can't feel it. Instead, they consider happiness the act of gratifying the ego. So they indulge themselves relentlessly feeding themselves with circumstances and things that will keep them happy. What fleeting happiness they achieve through gratification is soon destroyed, for the ego's discomfort comes from its perpetual insecurity. Giving it things doesn't make it feel secure. It only distracts it. You know that. You buy some new gizmo and you're thrilled with it. A few weeks later, it's in the back of the cupboard and you're on to the next thing. It's a perpetual wheel of discomfort. The ego grumbles, groans, moans, and constantly yearns for things to be a different way. Society is full of people that are crying out for something or someone to lift them up. To fix it for them, to provide for them, to keep them happy. Everybody wants someone else to guarantee their security. Responsibility is shifted away from self, where it hurts, to someone else, family, friends, the corporation, the government. The process is called transference. It's nothing more than the ego screaming to be set free from the agony that it's inflicting upon itself. That's why people say the world is ugly, because they are perpetually uncomfortable with themselves, perpetually insecure. To transcend to the infinite, you have to take responsibility, and through meditation and quiet time, you'll see that the pain you suffer comes from your reaction to circumstances, not from the circumstances themselves. By changing your reaction, you enter into a spiritual consciousness, one of beauty and contentment that is not available to most people in the world. You start by seeing this place, this earth, this life as beautiful. And you've got to see yourself as beautiful. You've got to know and trust that all is well with the world, that the current evolution is the way the current evolution is supposed to be. It's a nonsensity to presume that life should be different than the way it is. It may become different, but right now it is what it is. You got to know and you got to trust that all is well with you. You have to be satisfied where you find yourself, satisfied with yourself. Yes, you can change things, but if you're dissatisfied right now and you're entering into the infinite self, you create a consciousness that is eternally dissatisfied, eternally frustrated, eternally angry, let's say. So acceptance comes from disengaging from the world and understanding that you are not your emotions and you're not other people's emotions. When they express anger, fear, frustration, that's just the reaction of the ego. If you're dissatisfied, it's like having a perpetual itch that you can't scratch. You gotta make these circumstances right. So wander around your house and say, this is right. Wander around your workplace and say, this is right at this moment. Tomorrow it may change. Wander around your life and say, this is right and holy. Tomorrow, the energy will be more. But right now, it is perfect. The circumstances of my life are an external manifestation of my thoughts and feelings. I can learn from them. I accept it. This way, you stop fighting against yourself and you accept. The way it is the way it is. You're free. Once you get that, you're free. Say to yourself 3 or 4 times a day, the way it is the way it is. It's fine. It's not perfect. I will change it for the better. But it is the way it is. I accept that. Once you come out of acceptance, it's all over. You got it. You're free because you're no longer in the emotion. So, they'll pay you or they won't pay you. If they pay you, you eat. If they don't pay you, you go on a fast and lose a little bit of weight. If they show up at 11 o'clock, you'll get a ride to the ball game. If they don't show up at 11 o'clock, you can wait till 10 past or cancel going to the ball game. Or you can walk. Your husband's having an affair or he isn't having an affair. If he is having an affair, you've got 2 options. You can bring him home, scrub him down and tell him not to be so stupid. Or you can toss him out and find another one. The fact is, once you understand the way it is the way it is, you won't have to fight circumstances. You can work on changing things, but the first point is to accept. Once you've got that, then there's only 1 of 2 options. They either will or they won't. It's either going to happen or it isn't. You're either going to make it to the ball game or you won't, and you'll go to the cinema instead. There aren't any absolutes. But the mind decides it has to be like this. It must be like that. It has to be 8:15 and 10 to 9. It has to be pink and blue and people have to accept me and do these things. That's just the ego's agenda. You lent your lawnmower to your neighbor and in your mind you're saying, I've lent him my lawnmower. I want to borrow his motorbike next Saturday. You develop an agenda. Then when you ask to borrow his motorbike and he says no, you feel offended. Hey, the way it is the way it is. Maybe he's not a generous character, and he doesn't want to lend you his bike. So you shrug and you walk away, and you say, I would have liked his motorbike, but I'll take the bus instead. Look at the world and be satisfied. See it as eternal. And understand that you don't have to push against the way it is. All you have to do if you don't like things is walk away. Generally speaking, it's too much effort to change things. You've probably tried it with your relatives. You can't change them. You got to love them as they are. That's what unconditional love is all about. If I love you unconditionally, I accept you. If you love me unconditionally, you accept me. Now, that might be easy to do when you're being nice to me and I'm being nice to you, but what if I'm treating you badly? What if you're treating me bad? Then you have to become a big person and not be sucked into emotion when people treat you badly. That's the test. The main point is, you're never free until you disengage. So allow life to be the way it is, and the way it is the way it is. Tell yourself that 7 times an hour if needs be. There's a famous story in the Tao about a farmer. The farmer's son broke his leg. The villagers came to the farm and said, My, that's a great misfortune. Your son has broken his leg and cannot help you in the fields. The farmer replied, It's neither fortune nor misfortune. A day later, the government troops came to the village looking for men to go into the army. They had to leave the son behind because his leg was broken. Then one day the farmer's horse jumped the fence and ran away. The villagers came to him and said, What a great misfortune that your horse has run away. And the farmer replied, It is neither a fortune nor a misfortune. 2 or 3 days later, the horse came back with 12 wild horses following it. Suddenly the farmer had 13 horses, not just the one. The villagers came to him and said, It is a great fortune that your horse came back with 12 more horses. And the farmer replied, It is neither a fortune nor a misfortune. So remember, nothing is long or short, nothing is hot or cold, nothing is good or bad. Because you have to ask yourself, good in relation to what? Bad in relation to what? Once you accept and disengage, you're free. That's important. Part of this acceptance takes us to step 14, which is judge nothing and quantify as little as possible. When we judge and when we criticize people personally, what we're doing is defining reality and engaging the ego. Light couldn't exist if there wasn't darkness within which it could shine. Goodness can't exist if there isn't evil with which to compare it. So everything is relative. Chapter 2 of the Tao says, it is because everybody under heaven recognizes beauty as beauty that the idea of ugliness exists. And equally, if everyone recognized virtue as virtue, this would merely create fresh concepts of wickedness. For truly, non-being and being grow out of one another. Think about that. If you don't judge and don't criticize, what you're saying is, I'm infinite. I will let people be. I have no knowledge of this person's evolution. I can't comprehend whether he is good or evil, right or wrong. He may certainly be acting in a way which I do not choose to act, but I cannot lay down the law and say, it should be like this or it should be like that. Not infringing upon people means not interfering, not offering them information they haven't asked for, not offering them healing that they don't need or want or haven't requested, not meddling in their lives, allowing people to be as silly as they want for as long as they want, in the same way as the God force allows you to be as silly as you want for as long as you want. Don't judge. Okay, there are certain situations where you might be called upon to evaluate. Let's say you are the personnel officer in a corporation and you have to pick one person instead of another. That isn't judging one person individually or personally, it's just evaluating your options. Evaluating, say, two applicants for a job and picking whichever applicant is most suited. That isn't judging anyone positively or negatively, and you aren't judging the applicants personally. There's a difference, isn't there, between judging and selecting. You're not judging the Thousand Island dressing because you didn't choose that and you picked the oil and vinegar instead. Selection is not a judgment. It's making a choice without an emotion, without discrediting the choice you didn't make. And that's different to judging. When you're dealing with other people, allow them to be. If you don't like who they are or what they are, walk away. Or try to change the situation as best you can without infringing upon them, usually by your good example. Or talk to them in an affable manner. Ask them questions, leading them along to where they will see the higher ground through their own perception, own volition, where they freely choose that direction. One word from you could send a person into a totally different direction in this lifetime. It could change their whole evolution. You don't know what they need, what their deep inner spiritual self has decided. They may need high energy, they may need low energy, so that they can properly understand high energy at a later date. In addition, let me clarify the difference between judgment and observation. Judgment is when you engage your opinion and your emotion, judging others for an action or what they say. Observation is nothing more than commenting on what you or others might observe. So you might casually remark in a restaurant that the service is rather slow, as it's taken an hour, let's say, for the soup to show up. You haven't judged anyone personally, you've just observed. That's okay. Gradually, you'll learn not to quantify things too much and to just experience life rather than to define it. If you watch a movie and you start to quantify it, discuss it, and put it in a little box, your perception of it changes. I was walking along in Philadelphia one day. It was freezing cold. I had a pair of jeans on and a shirt. There's a meditation I learned years and years ago where you visualize a little flame and you put it into your heart. You allow that flame to expand and it warms you because you're thinking of the spirit of fire. So the heat is there. I was walking along nice and warm. Then the person with me said, "Aren't you cold?" And the minute they said that, the flame went out. I was freezing. In Philadelphia, it can get pretty cold, as you know. It was minus Christ knows what, with the wind factor of whatever. And because they imposed the reality upon me, saying, "Hey, you ought to be cold," my perception changed. Right up until they opened their mouth, I was perfectly warm. So they changed my reality. So you want to be careful that you don't quantify or impose upon people. Don't say, "This meal is very good, this meal is very bad." Just eat the meal. A bad meal should not be an emotional upset. It's a gift. It allows you to realize what constitutes a good meal. It helps you make selections, so be grateful. Once you don't have to define things, once you don't have to quantify things so much, you can just concentrate on experiencing them. You're not putting life into little boxes. So you can go from the ego's world to a state of just resonating with this infinity within. I am and I experience. I don't see high as high or low as low. Nothing is cold, warm, dry, or wet. I just experience it. Hey, I'm doing rain. I have no reaction. I'm experiencing happiness. I have no reaction. I'm not yabba-dabba-doing and swinging off the chandelier. I'm just content in silence. I fly a lot. I've been 97 times around the world, so I've done a lot of airport in this lifetime. I like to sit and watch people while I'm waiting for planes. Try this exercise. Go to a crowded spot, a shopping arcade, an airport, whatever, and just sit and watch people. But rather than watching them intellectually, watch them from inside the infinite self. Close down your mind and feel them out. So don't say to yourself, that's a pretty dress, that guy's so tall, she is so short, isn't that child cute? Don't engage the mind in defining and judging, just observe. Do it for 15 minutes when you go shopping next Saturday. You'll discover how dramatically that changes your perception. Suddenly you'll find yourself coming from compassion for people. You'll enter inside their spirituality, inside their infinite self. You'll be resonating with a feeling of belonging, a feeling of love, a feeling of caring for them. Not caring in the sense that you've got to look after them, but just enjoying the heroic nature of their humanhood, rather than putting them into little boxes and thinking, that's an Afro guy, here's an Oriental woman, etc., etc. They're just eternal spirits, schlepping bodies around, just like you and me. It's a great little discipline to do, and it's interesting because you learn a lot about people just by observing. Once you don't judge, a higher sense of awareness comes forward. You begin to touch upon all that subtle information that would not be normally available to you. Twice a year, I present a men's gathering called Wildfire in the mountains of New Mexico. During that weekend event, I take the guys out into the town, and I have them touch the subtle energy, the etheric energy, if you like, of passers-by. I show the men the height of their perception comes from the lightness of being. Through etheric knowledge and a few simple techniques, their perception jumps several 100% in just a couple of hours. By touching, perceiving, and not judging, the men understand. A door opens into another world. You can do it. You don't necessarily need me. Try this. As people walk past, visualize yourself with an extended arm. Push your imaginary hand quickly into their heart and grab a molecule of that person and pull it back to you. How does it feel? What do you perceive here? Who is this person passing by? Ask yourself, what is the overriding emotion of this individual? Bit by bit, once you've run 100 or 2 of these over a little time, you become very, very perceptive, and eventually you won't need to mentally touch people, mentally look at people. You won't have to mentally work out people. You'll look and you'll know. Once you know, you can never say. So remember, don't judge, don't criticize. Know it's okay to evaluate. It's okay to select. It's okay to observe, but don't criticize personally and try not to quantify things. Just experience them. Step 15, hold on to nothing. This is a tough one. You'll have to concentrate here. You're an infinite energy inside a body. The things you have around you are not really yours. They're just material manifestations of the infinite goodness. So your car, your house, your clothes are all on rental from the God Force. None of them is yours. When you depart this earth plane, you're going to have to leave them all behind. By placing a lot of emotion into having, you heighten not having, because you define what you have. Everything else falls into the category of, I do not have. You want material well-being? Yes. You want experiences? Yes. But the whole function of abundance is not to have money, it's to use it. You come to the earth plane as an energy. You've got a body to operate in, and you have to generate money to sustain that body. But that is different from generating money for security. There isn't enough money in the world to do that for the ego. That's why millionaires pound on relentlessly, often losing what they've already made in the chase for more. It's partly a power trip, but it's partly a security trip. You need to be generating money to buy experiences, yes, but you want to get to the end of your life with zip in the bank. And look back and think, my God, look at this huge pile of experiences. Because none of your memories is ever lost. Everything you've ever done is all part of your eternal memory. So what you're looking to do is not to acquire things, not to focus on the concept of having, because that'll make you poor. You have to come from the concept of experiencing. You have to invest in yourself. And you do invest in yourself because you're investing time and probably money in listening to these programs. So I know you invest in yourself. Release owning and not owning. If you own some real estate, fair enough. But you don't want the real estate to control you. You don't want things that you have to become a burden to you. If you buy a really fancy car, that sounds great on the surface, but in reality, you've got to polish it, insure it, worry about it. How much energy do you want to put into a car? It's better that you have an old clunker that you can leave anywhere with a little note on the window saying, please steal me, I need the insurance money. If you have this fantastic Ferrari, you'll be constantly worried about who's kicking his headlights in. It can become a trap. When you don't hold on to things, you're free. Don't hold on to the relationships of your life. I'm with this person. I'm with them today, but I don't own them. If they're here, they're here. If they're not here, they're not here. I'm doing this job, but tomorrow I might be doing something else. When you don't hold on, you're free. The more tight-ass you are about mine, the more money-grabbing you are, the less you will have in the end. What's the point of millions in the bank if you die as the world's greatest tight-ass? The restriction of it is grim. The more you defend the emotion of mine, the more lack you will have spiritually on an energy level, and the more you cut yourself off from the expansive infinity within. Remember, everything is care of the God Force. If you come home and the stereo is missing, you can say, ah, they've come for the stereo, rather than getting uptight. It's just gone back to the God Force. Somebody else has it now, and that leaves space for you to meditate and think about who you really are and what you really want. And you think, yeah, what I want is a hi-fi store. And off you go, and boom, you materialize a hi-fi store. And then you can say, look at these stereos, I own them all. But I don't actually own them. I'm renting them from the God Force. And I'm going to sell them to other people who also want to rent them from the God Force. So once you understand this concept, everything becomes transient. Holding nothing, you own everything. That's much better, more peaceful. You can actually enjoy the beautiful car, because you're not sitting there worrying about it. You can just smell the leather and drive along and say, wow, this is cool. People equate security with owning things. The things that you own for the most part are like nails you put through your shoe to keep you well and truly riveted to the floor. It's stuff. It lumbers you down. Half the stuff you own isn't worth having because it creates a prison for you, not an open pasture for you to run across. So start to realize you have nothing, you are nothing. When you get to the point where you can say, I am nothing, you're free because then you're everything. If you define yourself, then there's all sorts of stuff, by definition, you are not. Hold on to nothing. Just use things, enjoy them, be grateful, and give thanks. I stay in a country for about 6 weeks, and I leave. And I go somewhere else for a couple of months, and then I leave. And then I go back to the first country for a couple of weeks, and then I leave again. In the end, my whole life is in two suitcases. I can look at my suitcases and think, wow, I'm not holding on to very much. I'm not poor, I've got money in the bank somewhere, which I use to create more energy. But I'm not actually lumbered down with stuff. There's nothing sexier, I think, anyway, than piles of money in the bank that you use to create energy and buy experiences that you don't have to insure because the government insures it for you. That's sexy. And there's nothing sexier than a woman with her pocket stuffed full of cash. Very sexy, in my view. Don't hold on to things, because in the end, it's a complete illusion.